You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Gonna take it.
Two legends in basketball analysis with over 70 years combined experience. This is the Bob Ryan and Jeff Goodman podcast.
NBA, some college, a little bit of everything.
You know, what can I say? But it wasn't going to happen here with him. I was okay with it because it wasn't about talent, I didn't think.
All right, let's get right to it.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Ryan and Goodman podcast. He's Bob Ryan. I'm Jeff Goodman. And we thank you for subscribing, for listening. Wherever you do either of those. And after a week off of Bob being up in Maine and not having good cell service, or I don't know, up in Maine, you never know what you're going to get, you know, Bob. So we took the week off. Yeah. And we're back at it again here.
Yeah, we are. It was nice to get a week off, but it just, except that it rained every damn day, but we won't get into that. People don't want to hear about my problems. So then we got plenty on our table. We got plenty on our plate, as we say.
Yeah, plenty in our plate. And we're just talking off the air of, you know, how good it is to see the cities of Milwaukee and Phoenix kind of bask in something that they have waited for so long. I mean, it's been either mediocrity and mediocrity is being kind. Well, at times to both of those cities.
But empathy for both of them. First of all, you know, we should know that they came into the league together in 1968. And then a year later, and they had the predictable, you know, crappy season. And then a year later, the fatal coin flip, and the coin flip was won by the Suns, the Bucks, and they got Lou Alcindor, and the Suns got a consolation prize. Neil Walk, who actually had a decent career, but it was certainly far short of what one of the great players of all time was able to produce. Okay, and then they went in the third year, his second year, in their third year, they win. 50 years ago. It's hard for me to grasp, you know, that it was 50 years ago, yeah. But it was. It was a half a century ago that they won. And then the Suns, they stumbled into a finals in 76. No one saw coming. The best team in basketball in 1975-76 were the Golden State Warriors. They screwed up, okay? They were the best team. And they got beaten seven games by the Suns. I don't want to go too far into this, but Rick Barry famously pouted, and someone said,
no. I think Rick Barry pouted?
I think it was Al Addles who said, it was hard to pass the ball to a man standing with his arms folded. And they were the best team, Jeff. The Celtics were the beneficiaries of all this. They managed to beat the Suns. And then 27 years later, the Suns had a real shot against. But it was the Bulls, and the Michael's Bulls never lost the finals that they were in. And
that was a good Suns team, though.
It was a damn good team. Barkley was still very, 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 very viable. Paul Westphal coached them, and of course he had been one of the stars of the team in 76. Anyway, so they have a shared history, and here they collide in 2021. And what I love to see, this crowds, that deer, what is it? What do they call it?
Deer? Yeah, fear the deer. Fear the deer.
I love it. And I love this crowds at Chase Stadium, Chase Field. And what I love, the youth, these are young people.
Yeah.
This, if this is the future fandom of the NBA, God, that's wonderful. Because, you know, you're seeing preponderance of these faces are young, 20 and 30 somethings or younger. And I think that's
where the NBA is headed, though. Yeah, I mean, we could see
you gotta
that.
Replenish, you got to replenish the crop. You got to, you know, and thank God it's going to, I'm because there's been skepticism about this league, you know, and you know, the last year, I mean, the ratings were terrible. The you know, and the ratings are not what they were in the prime peak, but they're much, much better. They're back to where they were 2 years ago. And this is with two teams that aren't top of the line teams. These teams are, they're a pair of historical accident teams that are here. Whoever wins, they're going to have to listen to the whining in LA and Brooklyn.
Right.
And it's going to be some legitimacy to that whining.
Yes, I you know what? The more I thought about that, the more I throw it all out the window, because honestly, LeBron's 36. Like, he wasn't going to be 100% at some point here. Kawhi's been hurt before. Kyrie's always, seemingly always hurt, or KD, or James Harden. So, yeah, there were a few injuries that were probably outliers of the condensed
game. A few games that those three played together in Brooklyn, it's kind of a moot point.
Right. Anyway. I just...
They're like, not historically great teams, but they are what we've got, and they're putting on a predictably – I mean, I'd be damn disappointed if it doesn't go seven.
I hope it goes seven.
It deserves to go seven.
Right.
And I think it is a very good chance it will. Holding serve, you know, so far. And the thing is that neither team's that great team that you expect them to win on the road. I mean, not really. I don't think so. So it's going to be –
not with these home court advantages, too. Like, these aren't your ordinary home court advantages. These are like college atmospheres. I look at this on TV, and I say to myself, Milwaukee could easily be, you know, you're looking at Rupp Arena or something like that. So, I really, to be honest, I like this matchup. I think it's a breath of fresh air for everybody that is not tired of seeing LeBron. I'll never be tired of watching LeBron James. Like, honestly, never. I love watching him. But it's just nice to see
the game to have some fresh faces, I think.
Right.
And it's not like LeBron's coming back. I scoffed at that whole thing. You had to have LeBron. No, I mean, you don't have to have anybody. We have good friends. I mean, I'm saying, if you're a fan, you're not enjoying Booker. Right. You're not enjoying Giannis. You're not enjoying Middleton. Come on. Are you not enjoying Ayton? Come on. If you profess to love basketball,
right.
Then you should be enjoying this. You know,
Giannis's block in game four, Bob. It wasn't at LeBron level to me on Iguodala. It wasn't, the stakes weren't quite as high. It wasn't quite as, like, you know, chasing from behind. It was just different. That was highest level block that I've seen in my lifetime.
They're different. I mean, LeBron's was a straight chase down. Right. The only comparison I can give you, because I know the one, Tayshaun Prince had the one.
Yeah.
You know, people know. Okay. You know, the most famous block in our history in this town that Bill Russell made in 57, that people that saw it swear that it's the best play they've ever seen in their life, including nonagenarian Bob Cousy will tell you he's never seen a better play in his entire life than Russell. Russell, what happened basically, I'll try and sympathize it in the Reader's Digest version. He had just run on a fast break and scored, and his momentum had taken him off the court. It was off the court. And they made a quick outlet pass to an athletic, you know, a decent athlete named Jack Coleman, almost in midcourt. And Russell put his head down and ran him down and blocked the shot at the other end in the last minute of the play, and what turned out in the seventh game of the finals, in a 1-point game. So, I mean, that's the context of that one. Okay. And of course, the bronze was, you know, a very, very, very important game in a 7-point game. All right. And 1-point game. Now, they're different. And the amazing thing, not the amazing, the most notable thing to me about Giannis is that he had to do two different things. He started off guarding, you know, Booker, and then he had to readjust to do what he did. And all this is split second thinking and athleticism that at his size, we have seldom, if ever, seen. I don't know how many guys of that size could make they can make the block, but the whole transfer of energy and power and what it took to get from point A to point B in that time is something that not many people in the history of this game could even think about doing.
And not on a 6'3 guard on DeAndre Ayton, you know?
Yeah, right. So, right. And everything is context, ultimately, in judging them historically. This was a 2-point game with a minute and five or so to go. Okay, so it's very important. Obviously, the context of what LeBron did in the finals was a little bit more heightened. It was the seventh game. All right, fine. All right. So, hey, you know, No, there's no right, no wrong. But to me, there are different categories.
Incredible.
I'll go Plessy versus Ferguson, separate but equal. Fine. It's fine.
Wait, hey, Where does the Charles Smith block rank on your all time blocks?
I mean, which one?
What was it? Pippen? Who got him? Horace Grant.
Five different
times. Horace Grant.
I mean, you're the one where he got blocked like five different times?
Yeah, that's the one.
That he'll never live down and in certain areas. Yeah. Yes, that one. Yes, I had forgotten about that. But
It's so bad. They're like, what were they, down one? I think they were down one with like a minute left.
I'm sure there's plenty of Knicks fans who remind.
It was so bad. I'll never forget. I think I was watching that one with Alan Miller at WBZ. I was
interning for Channel 4.
Watching that one and just like in disbelief of how many times a guy could get blocked on the same possession.
Alan's practically a neighbor. He lives next town over.
Great guy. Great guy. One of the best. All right.
So this is we're talking in a broad text. So we go back to game four. And to me, my simple takeaway is this. Magic Johnson framed it for us 35 years ago. You get to a point in these games sometimes called winning time. And when it got to be winning time, Milwaukee made the big plays and Phoenix didn't. That's all.
But in Milwaukee, in Phoenix, does that flip? I mean, now we're talking about a three-game series in which both teams have looked completely dominant at home. So can Milwaukee, Bob, can they steal one of these games on the road? Because obviously they look like two completely different teams.
Well, they can't. We're going to have to, naturally. And I just don't think we're talking true greatness here. We're talking the best of 2021, which is not true greatness in a historical context. You can log every both ways and say
the answer is yes. That's your answer, and that's mine.
Phoenix is an invincible team. I mean, you're right. The atmosphere is great. It's collegiate atmosphere. It's great. It's heartwarming to see that. I'm very enthused about that. But they can make mistakes. Oh, all right, let's get right to it. Booker had 42 points. Booker was tremendous. He missed a vital 5 minutes of the game because he picked up a fifth foul. No. Because he committed 6 and 7, which is a story. We do have to address this because it's a serious issue that cast a bad light on the NBA.
Yeah, you got to call fouls. I don't care how many fouls your stars have going into the last couple minutes. It was a clear foul. And like you said, multiple clear fouls.
But then the one on the baseline, too. He had two. But the big, when he wrapped him up. That's a foul. Period. I'm sorry. I don't care who does it. I don't care. You know me. I'm big on context. I think that a ticky-tack foul in the fourth quarter is not worthy of calling. Right.
That was no ticky-tack foul.
If you want to establish something early in the game, the referees, well, here's the way we're going to play. Fine. But, this is not falling that category. This comes in the category of, come on. What happened was social media went crazy, and if conspiracy theorists all over the world went into full gear, and they should, because this has cast a bad light in the NBA. Did not Jim Capers Jr. admit they blew the call afterward, which is nice, but it doesn't help. They won the game. The good thing is they won the game.
It's an embarrassing look. It's a bad look. It is. At the end of a game like that, when it's so clear cut and everybody can see it, and to me, again, you're right. You've got to adjust how you officiate in the last couple minutes.
I'm a big fan of officiating.
But there's a difference.
Officiating is not all about showing every last jot and tittle of the rule book.
Right.
There's a common sense factor that must be incorporated into officiating. It's a high level art form. It's what it is. And the foundation of it is you do know the rules, chapter and verse, but there are circumstances. Well, this, however, did not fall into any of those categories. There's certain egregious levels of criminality, that this passed every test of that. It was a heinous act, and it should have been punished.
So, all right, we get Chris Middleton is the Batman to Giannis, right?
Yeah, right.
Give me the best Batman Robin. Like, who's the best Robin? Who's the best Robin out there? That's what I was trying to say. Middleton.
Historically, you're talking about now?
Historically,
the sort of jumped to mind right away are Pippen to Michael.
Yeah,
Michael. They don't win without Pippen. I mean, obviously, vice versa is true. But I mean, Pippen was such a versatile player, great defensive player. He had ball handling. He had vision.
Bob, am I wrong here? When I watched Scottie Pippen, I never thought, honestly, when I was watching him at the time, I was like, he's a great player, but like, is he one of the best ever? I never, ever watched him thinking that. Maybe I was young and I didn't put enough stock into defense that I do now. But I just never watched him feeling like Scottie Pippen was one of those greats that I was going to look back on and say, man, I was so fortunate to be able to watch him.
No, you don't. But he made the vital contribution necessary to be this Batman to be the
Robin. He fit well with Michael. He fit perfectly.
I got to tell you a funny thing that I would, for whatever it is worth, two things. I was told on the highest authority of knowledge that Scottie Pippen, when he was playing, would walk around with glasses after the game,
yeah,
which were clear frame. So you read it.
You see him with those glasses. He looks smart. He looked like the intellectual.
The second one is, and I was witness to this multiple times, and in the Monte Carlo and the week run up to the Olympics, at night everybody would go to the casino, and Scotty would never play at Michael's table.
Couldn't afford it. Couldn't afford it, Bob.
Didn't want to be overshadowed. I don't think he would.
So he had that enough. He had that enough on the court. He didn't need that.
He wasn't going to play at Michael's. Right. So I just read it to those, into whatever you want. Those two.
All right. So back to the original question. Okay.
Oh, Mikhail than Bird.
Better. You would say Mikhail, you would put over Pippen.
Well, I'm saying there's the two that come to mind right away.
Would you put Mikhail number one that you've ever seen, or would you put Pippen ahead of Mikhail? Well,
you know, the problem is that neither one, you know, in both cases, and with, you know, Larry doesn't win without Kevin, and you know, there's no way, you know, we can, or Robert for that matter. He had two, right. But Kevin more than anything. But Robert Parris can't be left out of this discussion in terms of what he meant to that. In fact, they won. I know for a fact their W's and L's without him they won more games without Bird and Mikhail than they did ever without Parrish when he didn't play, by the way, over that time. So anyway, I'm trying to think, you know, but the Lakers,
Worthy
it go that way? Yeah, right, Worthy.
James Worthy?
Yeah, but then, you know, at what point do we declare who's Batman? You know, there was a transfer of
it was Magic was Batman.
All right, okay. But first, you know, with everybody had to pay homage to Kareem.
Right.
But then we know by 96, 97, right, it was Michael's, Magic's team, yeah, you know, and Kareem was the, so yeah, Worthy, you know.
Wasn't Worthy close? You don't think, like, Worthy to me, I don't think Worthy was that far off from Pippen. Maybe I'm crazy.
No, they're both in that, you know, 45 to 55 range of top 50, I think.
And where's Mikhail?
Well, I think he's doesn't get enough credit.
You think he's more in the 30? You think he's more in the 30 to 40 range?
And I'll tell you who's the president of the Mikhail fan club is Charles Barkley.
Yeah. Because he couldn't guard him.
Talked to him. You know, Barkley always felt that he was a bigger problem for them than Bird, for him and the teams. But Mikhail, and we've never seen anything like Mikhail since he retired. He took that game home with him.
Yeah.
He took it and locked it in the closet. And nobody's played the game like him. And that's 28 years ago.
This episode of the Ryan and Goodman podcast is brought to you by LinkedIn. Today, many small business owners are busier than ever. Because they are focused on managing and growing their business, they can't always spend the time that they wish they could on recruiting. That's why LinkedIn Jobs has made it easier to find and hire the best candidates for free. Get started by posting your job for free to reach LinkedIn's network of 740 million professionals. Fill out targeted screening questions and get your role in front of the most qualified candidates with the experience, skills, and motivation that you need. Then, it's easy to filter and prioritize the top candidates you'd like to interview. LinkedIn Jobs will help you hire the right person for your role. Did you know every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? Post your first job for free at linkedin.com/scribe. That's linkedin.com/scribe to post your first job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Let's get back to Chris Middleton. Let's flip it back here. Chris Middleton.
Well, he's shown he can do it.
I love him. I love this guy because, you know what, his story from day one, I think he's from Charleston, South Carolina, went to Texas A&M, nobody cared. He was, you know, underrated. Yeah. Goes to A&M, second rounder when he comes out of school, and nobody cares again. He's not even supposed to stay in the NBA. I think his game is really fun to watch. I mean, that mid-range game, he's smooth. He doesn't need space. He finds a way using angles. And you know what else, Bob? He never says a word. He just plays ball. Like in an era where everybody wants to bitch, moan, complain to the refs and everybody. Watch Chris Middleton. He is a throwback, a complete throwback.
Well, when he, you know, in the beginning, the only thing that the reason he got my attention was spelling of his name. I'm serious. In the beginning, first couple of years, I can't tell you a thing about him. You know, I didn't pay attention to him. He's made himself into this kind of a high level player and an Olympian, you know? And he's capable. Look, he's had multiple 40 point games. So we got to give him his due. And, you know, but both he and Booker have had their off nights, you know, we know that. And shooting wise and, you know, the old make miss league thing, you know, but we always expect them in a given night to be good. And generally speaking, they are.
I think with Middleton too, the added bonus is, again, you've got a star in Giannis who you can't always put the ball in his hands in the final couple of minutes. So you're seeing Middleton take on that kind of Batman role when it matters most at times. And that, you know, to me, again, the other night, he was tremendous.
It was big basket of the big basket. I mean, he kept, you know, at the end of the third quarter, Booker had 38 out of 82. And he had whatever he had, but he had a big fourth quarter and making the big buckets. Although our podcast guest made a real, real big one.
Two big ones. He had a follow in the lane with about 4 or 5 minutes left, Pat Connaughton, and then hit that huge three.
That was the go-ahead basket.
After airballing one earlier on in the series.
It was really wide left.
It was.
But that was a huge basket. And by the way, the more you see him, you should appreciate, you know, he's not a great player, but he's a well-rounded player.
He knows what he is.
He guards your ass off. He can see, you know, not make a creative pass. He can make the right pass. Right?
Yeah, and they put him on, Chris Paul.
So
a lot.
He got my best supporting actor the other night. He got to work for that.
No, he's been very, very, very underrated. All right, so who are you, you know, we do this every week with where we're at now. We've only got one series left, 3 games left. Who are you going with now?
I'm going to stick. I don't want to jump off. I'll stick with the Suns. Yeah. You know, but one thing that this big X factor is, of course, Paul is starting to everybody's talking about, you know, what is it? Why suddenly the turnovers? So, you know, after being so careful with the ball and the entire playoffs, and suddenly he's coming five, and that was the other night.
A bad one.
He touched all the bases of different types of turnovers too, passing to nobody, and then that last one was utterly inexplicable because that was a total unforced error. That dribbling the ball left to right into the lane and just losing it without, you know, anybody really harassing him and unduly. I don't think so. Am I wrong about
nobody?
That?
No, he just, it looked like he leaned the wrong way. And then Giannis,
and, you know, it's so, you know, suddenly there's a little, you know, here it's a guy that's given us a 37 point game, a 41 point game. So I'm not bailing on him either, you know, but he's got to, obviously he's got, as Cher said, he's got to snap out of it. All right. And so that's that. And then Booker, I just say one thing, one little, yeah, but about Booker, get smarter on defense.
He's never been a great defender, Bob. He's gotten better.
Never been in foul trouble to start with because he commits bad fouls.
Yeah. Well, I mean, too, the other thing, you know, normally we talk about, well, one team has a major advantage here. We're going to the final 3 games. They've been there before, right? They've been there. Well, we can't say that. Nobody's been there before other than Jay Crowder.
You know, you're right. No, that's the fun of the fun. I'm going to give you a guy that it wouldn't surprise me if he – if he gets 20 points, you know, Saturday night, right? Yeah. And that would be Cameron Payne. He has turned out to be a wild card. He is the Joker in the deck, folks. Yeah. I mean, think about what he did when they didn't have Chris Paul.
He's terrific. He saved it.
He has bursts, and the stuff he can do. He can do things. He can make a three, and he can go to that basket. And he's got that, you know, high off the glass, you know, to get the ball over anybody thing going down. He's figured it out. He can go over 10. I mean, he's not a great player, but he's an interesting player and potentially a very useful player. I expect in one of the remaining games him to play a prominent role.
All right. So you mentioned, we talked about Chris Middleton. He's one of the three players that is going to join the Olympic team once this series is over, or expected to join, hopefully join. because Lord knows they need all the help they can get right now. So Middleton, Drew Holiday, and Devin Booker are all supposed to join the team before they go to Tokyo. This team has lost two exhibition games to Nigeria, to Australia. They rallied. They bounced back and beat Argentina in a huge game, because if they had gone 0-3, I think the sky would have been falling on this group. Greg Popovich is going at reporters that question, God forbid they question Greg Popovich, right? I said it on NBC Boston last week. I'm so tired of his shtick. I'm so tired of it, Bob. I have so much respect for him as a coach.
Yeah.
But I'm past it. I'm almost like, you know what? It's time. It's time, Pop. Go retire. Take some accountability. Take some accountability at this point. I know, and I'm the first one to say, it's exhibition games. Nobody is going to care if they win gold what happened in these two losses. However, don't snap at a reporter for asking a legitimate question.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I want to like Pop, and I've always admired Pop. But you're right. It's not necessary. Come on, you should be above that. You know, it was kind of funny for a while, you know, right. And the whole thing with Doris Burke and she was great about it and everything. But no. I mean, because it just looks petty. He lost. And, you know, I'm sorry. Man up. Come on, you know, be a leader.
Figure out how to get these guys to move the basketball, Bob. That's what you should be worried about.
And yeah, you can't be going 1-1. What interesting thing, when they losing to Australia is not a horrible disgrace, in the context. I'm looking at their roster. I thought they had a little more, so people don't know, the NBA players they have are Joe Ingles, Matthew Dellavedova, and Aaron Baines. And they got Jock Landale, who the college fans will remember.
I love Jock Landale.
Okay. But it shouldn't be enough. You know, Nigeria supposedly had 7 NBA players. Not that anybody could name any of them.
I didn't know 6 of them were even in the league.
No. The thing about Nigeria, historically, I can tell you from my, international experience I'm calling on now, is that there's been raw talent, particularly with big men over the years, and, you know, including the greatest non-American of all time, you know, which was a larger one. But there's been raw talent, but coaching was lacking. And now they have a legitimate American coach in Mike Brown. Yeah. And Mike Brown's got 260 wins on his resume and a coach of the year. And so he's a legitimate coach. And they've got that going for him. But they shouldn't be beating America under any circumstances. That one. But that was the first game. And, and all the excuses about we haven't played together, blah, 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 blah. You should be better than that. I'm looking at our roster. Durant, Jeremy Grant, Draymond, who's now, how old is Draymond? Bam, right? Bam's in his prime. Kevin Love, you want to talk about that, why he's on the team.
You know what? Jalen Rose was right on that one. I know a lot of people were killing him. I don't know if you saw his comments, but his comments were basically, the only reason Kevin Love's on this team is because he's white. He's right. He's right. Kevin Love's been, he's also been in the USA system since he's been 14 years old.
We shouldn't need Kevin Love. You know what I'm saying? And quote unquote, we shouldn't need Kevin Love.
I would rather have any college kid. I'd rather throw Chet Holmgren over there to learn than Kevin Love, because Kevin Love is not going to play. He's not going to play anyway. So I would rather throw a young kid over there who's coming in, or throw Julius Randle in there. How do we not get Julius Randle with the year he had? Put him in there. At least he'll give you some talk.
It's a very disturbing, curious. The backcourt is Lillard, Giroux, Middleton, and Booker. You know, I'm happy with that. That should be fine. I mean, and then I got him in mid-size, Zach LaVine. I mean, we got Zach LaVine. Yep. That's our team, folks.
And in that group that's over there now, who makes anybody better? Give me one player who consistently makes anybody better that is over there right now. And even realistically, I like Drew a lot. He's your best chance because he guards and he's actually a point guard. But Dame Lillard isn't making people better.
Well, all right. We're going to have to win despite that.
Right. Going to have to just outscore people.
Here's a team. The country with the most NBA, juice is France. And they can offer up Batum, Fournier, Nalikina, I never can pronounce his name right. And one really, really high-level player, Rudy Gobert.
Yep.
And then Yabusele, who's proven he can't play.
Oh, come on. Come on. The Danny Ainge special.
Yeah. But, you know, that's that's NBA. I could see them, you know, having a big game and being in the game and you know, with 8 minutes to go. And, you know, now. And then Spain, who, of course, was our big threat the last two times out. The Gasol brothers are still hanging around.
Yeah, not playing a whole lot, but they're still making money.
You know, Pal's 40. Yeah. And Marcus, you know, and they got Rudy Fernandez, they got Ricky Rubio, and they got Hernan Gomez. And William Hernan Gomez.
Are you worried? Like, how concerned are you that the this is going to be a catastrophe? Because if they don't win gold, they are going to be the butt of so many jokes.
I can't see us losing today. I'm looking at these rosters. That's why I dug up these rosters. Yeah. What country is stacked enough the way France, the way Spain was to give us two great games? So, in both Beijing and London, it was like 3 minutes to go. The game ain't over, folks. We got a hump to win this game. And do you think that France rivalry should the roster should be able to do it? Do you think that Australian roster should be able to do it? And if we're playing our right way, I'll be mortified, frankly.
I feel like you're bringing in like Booker and Middleton, two guys who can score, we know, at a high level. Like, do you need that? I mean, you got Kevin Durant, Damian Lillard, Jason Tatum.
Well, you know, it's nice, but you want, you know, it would mean Durant wouldn't have to play 38 minutes. That's all, you know.
It's just duplicate.
It's a 40-minute game. So,
you know who should be on this team? You know who should be on this team? Honestly, he'd be perfect for this group. Mike Conley.
Oh,
he'd be perfect. Put him out there for 30 minutes with four scorers. There's nobody better than Mike Conley. Now, again, he's not like the level of defender Jrue Holiday is. So either one of those guys, but Conley's just like pass first, like just a great team guy. Doesn't need, you know, to score. So like I would have been happy with Jrue Holiday, Mike Conley point guards.
That's all right. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, you're right. I can't argue that. I like the idea.
Because the team is just so full of scorers. You don't need a scorer necessarily like Damian Lillard with the ball in his hands all the time, dribble, dribble, dribble.
That's true. And we're going to see and how about our boy Tatum? How do you see him fitting into this group?
I mean, again, listen, I think the expectations for him, you know, like Pop, I think was trying to say, like, Kevin Durant's still on this team.
Oh, yeah.
Like, until Kevin Durant leaves his team, he's the face of it.
Oh, yeah.
So let's not try to make Jason Tatum into something he's not yet. Now, again, in 4 years, yes, Jason Tatum, I think, will be the face of Team USA in 4 years. He's not there yet.
Now, I just thinking out loud here as we're speaking, I haven't fully explored what the possibilities are for some of those Eastern European teams. You know, obviously Jokic is going to be there, but how much else did they have? Slovenia, I can't imagine. They got too much depth. You know, although once upon a time, you know, back in the old days, you know, Croatia and Serbia, Croatia particularly, Lithuania, who are falling down. They're not even there, I don't believe. But they, you know, they beat us, you know, and they first of all, in Sydney, they got, almost got jobbed that we lucked out, and then finally did beat us. And you know, and of course, I got to throw this one out there. I don't know if you've ever thought about it, but in terms of the dream team, my thesis always was that if the Yugoslavia before the breakup of the country, the team that they had, if they were playing a dream team in a best of seven, and it was game three, down 0-2, going back home to either Zagreb or Belgrade with the raucous crowd and a little home cooking, could they have pulled it off? And I'll go to my grave thinking yes.
Who did they have? Who did they have?
They had Kukoc, what's his name? The great shooter.
Drazen. Drazen.
Drazen Petrovic. Yeah. They had Dino Raja, who's in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. They had the San Antonio guy with the funky dribble. Anyway, they had enough player. Oh, shooters. That was a good team.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I'm saying. All right, I utterly had nothing to do with anything we're talking about. Oh, I want to throw one other thing out there. Well, we're on the topic of, I'm watching the game four, and I'm watching Giannis on one of his perambulations to the hoop. And I see him go hop, skipping, and jumping like an Olympic, event. And I'm writing down, and here's what I write down. A Euro step is one thing, but a Euro stroll was quite another. And I'm thinking of the song by the Diamonds. Come, let's stroll across the...
It's hard to tell sometimes with these Euro steps.
It was hilariously, and it wasn't called. You know, he took a stroll, not a step.
That's Norris.
It's out of control. It really is. The Euro step thing, it's out of control.
And
you throw in, give him that advantage.
Right. He's so long.
God.
He'd go from half court.
Yes.
He'd go from half court and
keep your eye open. Look for a stroll somewhere down the road here and what's left of this series.
All right. Let's end with the lightning rod that is Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
He is now, according to Shams Charania, on the block. Which is no surprise, because after any of us watched the postseason this past year with Philly, you know, Doc Rivers take him out of the games. In key spots, he's on the bench because he can't be in the game because he can't shoot free throws. And mentally, he's just distraught. You can tell, even though you can't see it on his face necessarily, that he doesn't want the ball in his hands at the end of the game because, again, he doesn't have any confidence in shooting the ball from the line, never shoots from the three. I've known him a long time, Bob. I've known him a long time. In fact, I spent the day with him. His first game at LSU, I flew in and did something for ESPN and I had already known him. I broke his commitment to LSU when he was like a sophomore. And so I had known him for a while and literally spent like hours with him on his first game. And he's a really likable kid. He really is. He's got some shit to him and a little bit of arrogance and whatnot, a little bit different than everybody else. People killed him because, you know, they weren't good at LSU and he didn't care about school. But he always he would tell me, listen, I didn't come over here to play college basketball. I came over here. I grew up wanting to play in the NBA. I never grew up wanting to play college basketball. So that's number one. Number two, it really surprises me that Ben Simmons hasn't taken some of the naysayers and said, I'm going to prove them wrong. I'm going to work on my three-point shot. And instead, it's almost like he's fought it and said, you guys can tell me and say it all you want. I'm going to do what I want to do. And what I do best is go to the basket and make people better and defend at a high level. And he does everything other than shoot the basketball. Now, again, that might have been okay in the 70s or 80s. It's a lot harder to do right now with the way the game is played. If you can't shoot the ball, you're not, to me, you can't be one of the top 10, probably even 20 players in the NBA.
My simple question is, Ben, and I understand everything you're saying, is that what is the market value? Who wants, and that's A, and B, when you get them, does somebody say, okay, Ben, you know, or before you get them, do you have are you able to talk with them, you know, and get it straightened out before you pull the trigger? Okay. You know what I've been saying for 2 years, like you should be locked in the gym for 3 hours a day all summer with armed guards outside, you know, to make sure he doesn't leave.
The big knock on him is that he doesn't work hard enough in the gym. That's always the big knock. If you talk to people around the Sixers organization, nobody will say it publicly, but it's that he doesn't work hard enough. He's not in there all the time. And, you know, you got to be in there and then you got to work on it. Also, even if you're in the gym all the time, you got to do it on the court, you know, when the games are going on as well. And you got to be prodded, and Brett Brown would say it, but you wonder like how much he was telling Ben. Like, obviously he wasn't, because he should have been telling him like, no, you have to shoot the three today. You have to shoot it. Because I mean, again, he's getting uncontested look after uncontested look. It's not like, you know, Marcus Smart, right? Like Marcus Smart is sometimes unbearable to watch shooting threes because he'll take threes with guys in his face and you're like, what are you doing? Ben Simmons, he'll never have, it's like a 1-0 workout. Nobody's out there guarding him.
No. I don't know how you get this far, you know.
Right.
And really, unless, but you're right. He's so good at other aspects, you know, and at that size, the defensive capability is, you know, obviously attractive to coaches naturally. I understand that,
yep.
But it's not just the three, it's the free throw thing. You know, you can be, I'm thinking about guys, Brook Lopez, who did, you know, it wasn't when he started out, it was, he didn't take any threes. He was an old fashioned low post center, but he was also a good free throw shooter. I'm just saying. And then he's made himself into
Al Horford's a great example of that, right? Okay. Like was a mid-range guy, good free throw shooter, probably in the mid-70s. And then what did he do? The game changed. So Al Horford changed. He adapted. Ben Simmons, we're not even asking you to adapt. We're asking you to honestly get in the gym, work, and then take those shots.
But this is a rarity. I won't say it's unique because I'm sure someone, I'll think of somebody that may be remotely comparable, but a guard you have to take out of the game at the most crucial moments is something we're not used to. We're used to, you know, we live with Shaq, we live with others, but now, a guard, you're
right.
No, should never be.
Point guard
should never be.
Can't. No. I mean, you can't. You need your point guard in the game more than anybody else.
So, no.
And to take him off the court. Yeah, it's funny. I almost feel like a change of scenery. Like,
yeah.
Different, but like Markelle Fultz, right? Like, Ben Simmons just needs a change of scenery, a fresh start. But what I will say is Ben Simmons has to go to the right place to be effective. He's got to go somewhere that he's got three guys who can really, at least three, if not four, that can really shoot the ball. You can't put him on a team with, you know, Zion, for instance. You can't trade him to New Orleans because the spacing just doesn't work with Zion Williamson and him or something like that. You know, PJ, you got to have the right guys around him.
Well, that's why I'm curious is what the market value is and what the audience is for him. Well, it'll be very fascinating to see. I mean, yeah. Absolutely. But
yeah, we'll see that. I mean, I don't know how long this thing will drag on. I don't think Philly's in any major rush, but we're getting down to draft less than 2 weeks away now and then free agency. So we could be talking about Ben Simmons having a different uniform within the next month at this point. So we'll see. Come back again next week. We'll have a NBA Finals wrap up edition, and we'll start to talk draft, Bob. I want you to do your draft due diligence here. Uh-oh. In the next week, and we'll talk about the top four of the draft. Clear as day, in my opinion. Clear as day. I don't know how it's going to shake out, other than the fact that what I do know, Cade Cunningham will be the number one pick of the Detroit Pistons. But we'll run through it next week.
Okay.
A full kind of draft breakdown. The guys that you got to know about, the underrated guys, the ones that are rising up the draft boards. And we'll talk about that next week. But thanks for joining us. Another episode of the Ryan and Goodman podcast in the books. Go ahead, Bob.
Just remember, watch for the stroll.
Watch for the stroll because it gets, it's a bigger and bigger stroll. It's seemingly every game, every series, every year.